Right, we're in a series, you may remember, all about superheroes, one of my favourite subjects, I don't know about you lot, but I love the whole idea. I'm always at the movies whenever there's a new superhero movie comes out, and there's been a ton of them this year, which has been excellent for me, but there you go. I want to see if you recognise this phrase, okay? So let's test your superhero knowledge. Here you go, faster than a speeding bullet, more powerful than a locomotive, able to leap tall buildings with a single bound. Who is that a description of? It is, well done. Well, what did you say? Someone say somebody else. Is it somebody you know? Well, if it is, we'd like to meet him. Okay, sometimes maybe you feel like that's how your boss treats you at work. I don't know, I need to be that in order to get any smile out of his face. But here's who it actually refers to. There you go. Very similar physique to me, really. So there's, there's Superman. Superman had it all. He has it all, really. In terms of superpowers, he's got more than anybody else combined. He's slightly spoilt with that. But having said all that, he has one major weakness. Can anybody tell me what Superman's major weakness is? Yeah, I was going to say Lois Lane, but, you know. It's always a woman, isn't it, lads? It's always a woman. No, it is. What's that? It's that he wears his underpants the wrong way. Yeah, I think that is a weakness. Yeah, I think you're right. Possibly an arrestable offence. Yes, I think you're right. Yeah. Thank you, Joe. That is another one. Mark got it. Kryptonite. Kryptonite is his major weakness. Kryptonite can render Superman, the most powerful individual in the universe, powerless. Completely powerless. And yet we still call him a hero, don't we? Even though he's got, that's interesting, he's got a weakness, one that leaves him completely powerless, yet we still refer to him as a hero. And we've been talking about superheroes. We've said this is what we think heroes might be. A hero sees what everyone else sees, but they choose to do what no one else does. They see what everybody else sees, but they do something different, something brave, something that when everybody's running away from the danger, they run towards it. They do that sort of thing. We also said another definition of a hero is someone who saves the day, someone who can save the day for somebody else. We said last week, save the day how? Well, by meeting a need, by paying the price, by not talking themselves out of it. And on that basis, anybody can be a hero because we can all meet needs. We can all weigh up the cost and accept it, accept the cost of helping somebody and not talk ourselves out of it. Everybody could be a hero if that's what a hero is. Everybody can be one. And we talked about that last week. If all that is true and attainable, what is keeping me from being a hero? If I can do that, what's stopping me? What's stopping me? What is our kryptonite? What is the thing that renders us powerless more often than not? And it's a really obvious one. We've been talking about it all the way through the service, and it is that. That stops us every time. That renders potential heroes powerless. And you may argue, I never wanted to be a hero in the first place, Phil. Please pick somebody else. I'm quite happy just keeping my head below the parapet. But many of us grew up seeing someone else as our hero. Many of you probably grew up with some figure in your life who you looked up to. And you thought, you know what, I want to be like them. If I can be like them, wow, that would be fantastic. So I think deep inside of us, there is a desire to be something of a hero. I don't think anybody wakes up or grows up thinking, I want to be ordinary. I want to just be mundane. I think we all grow up wanting to be special, wanting to be something, wanting our lives to make a difference, wanting to be great in some shape or form. We all do. So we do want to be heroes. But often that gets in the way. That stops us. Fear gets in the way. And most of you don't have to think too hard, I suspect, to know what you're afraid of. what your fears are. I don't know, those of you who use social media, I don't use social media a huge amount because I'm not old-fashioned, I'm just not convinced it's quite as good as it's made out to be. It has its purposes and its points, but it also can create all sorts of problems for people. Lots of insecurities and anxieties comes off the back of social media and comparing your life to other people can be rather dodgy because nobody ever puts on social media, I'm having a lousy day. Well, very few people do that. They always put all the great stuff on there and you think their life is perfect and then you start feeling miserable about yours. There is a huge amount of mental health issues about social media at the moment and you probably know about it too. But there is a thing, if you are on social media, called clickbait. Have you come across clickbait? You may not. You probably have, but you don't know it's called clickbait. Clickbait is when a little sort of article pops up while you're on social media, and it often will tell you an interesting story like, I don't know, man eats 3,000 cheeseburgers and loses weight. Or something like that, you know, some bizarre story. And it just pops up and you go, ooh, and you click on it to try and find out, what's that about then? You know, it'll be some celebrity or it'll be some fantastic story, and it's called clickbait. And they're deliberately put there by advertisers so that you click on it, and you often click on it, and you end up buying something that you don't need because it's a link to some sort of sales technique or some service or product. And it's called clickbait. And the bait is an interesting story that then leads you on to their product or whatever. You may have had all those sort of pops up. Most of them, some of them operate by fear. Some of them operate by fear. The fear of, you know, not having something or not being good enough. Or I need one of those because if I don't, I'll miss out. And often they operate in that way, clickbait. So you've encountered some of this sort of stuff, some of that fear that drives you into a certain direction. But you've also encountered other things. What are you afraid of in life? I did a little inventory, and I think this is fairly accurate of some of the major things that that get in the way. Here are a few of our fears. Inadequacy, uncertainty, failure, rejection, missing out, change. It always produces a bit of anxiety. It's quite normal. Losing control. Being judged. Getting hurt. Something bad happening. Those are some of our major fears. I think those are the big ones. I think those hit us more often than not. And at the root is some of those. Root of our fear is some of those feelings or concerns. Missing out. Maybe we're afraid of getting hurt or being vulnerable again because we've learnt that getting close to people can be dangerous and they can hurt you, so we're never going to get close to them again, you know. So we avoid getting hurt. So it could mean we avoid relationships. Maybe we're afraid of being shamed. Maybe we've been shamed in the past and somebody's just put us down when we messed it up. So we thought, I'm never doing that again. So we never take risks anymore. And fear can stop you taking risks. Fear can stop you getting into relationships. Fear can stop you taking new opportunities. And often the fears behind them are these. That just say, oh, I don't know, it's too risky, too dangerous, I'm not going there. Fear is unavoidable. That's the bad news. I've got to be honest with you. If you want to go through life never, ever being afraid, it's not going to work. Fear is unavoidable. I would actually say fear is sort of normal and it's built in. If you were never afraid of anything, trust me, you wouldn't live very long. It's part of what God put it. It is there and it's there for a reason. The reason you don't stick your hand in the fire is because you're afraid of what will happen to you if you do. So it does protect you on occasion, but sometimes it gets too powerful and it kicks in inappropriate times and inappropriate places, and that's when you're in trouble. When fear is in the wrong place, stopping you doing the right thing. Fear is often learnt through bad experience as well, isn't it? Often we learn. I mean, relationships are a good one. If you're someone who struggled with intimacy, and it's probably because you've been hurt. It's probably because, you know, that's a risk. if I put myself out there again and they don't respond or they ignore me or they kick back, and I'm going to get hurt again. So I'm not doing that. I'm not wearing my heart on my sleeve anymore. I'm not going to get close because I can't face the pain of somebody saying no, of just rejecting me or treating me in a bad way. So we can learn to be afraid of certain things. And we all have to deal with fear, but the truth is it doesn't have to cripple us and it doesn't have to limit us. And there is appropriate fear. But what do we do with that fear that we've learned and grown up with and developed in an unhealthy way that really is just stopping us being all that we can be? Turn to Matthew chapter 14. You got a Bible there? Find Matthew chapter 14. And it's a wonderful story, one that you'll be very familiar with, Matthew chapter 14. And we're going to work through this together as we think about what do I do with that inappropriate fear. That fear that isn't protecting me, but is actually limiting me. How do I deal with that? How do I deal with my personal kryptonite, my fear, whatever that may be, that's rendering me powerless when I could be powerful? So Matthew 14, and this is a well-known story. What's just happened is that Jesus has just fed 5,000 people. With a couple of loaves and a few fish, and he's done it in a miraculous way. He's fed 5,000. That was just the guys. We don't know how many women and children were there, but he's fed thousands of people. Jesus just demonstrated, I'm big. I can do anything I choose to do. Trust me, folks. He's just demonstrated his power. And then he sent his disciples on ahead, and he said, you head over to the lake, and I'll come and catch up with you. The trouble is, they didn't quite understand what he meant by, I'll come and catch up with you. And here's what happened. Meanwhile, the disciples were in trouble, far away from land, for a strong wind had risen and they were fighting heavy waves. They'd been out on the water, we think, at this point for 9 hours. That means this journey shouldn't have taken that long. That means they're in real trouble. They're stuck, they can't move, they're not making any progress. And they're in trouble. And these are fishermen. They know how to sail. These guys are getting worried because 9 hours is a bad sign if you've still not crossed the lake. Verse 25, about 3 o'clock in the morning. That's the worst time. You ever wake up in the middle of the night? If you get worries and fears, that's about the time you'll wake up. 3 a.m., depth of the night, you'll wake up. Oh. And you'll be reminded of whatever is on your mind. It will play out in the small hours of the night. 3 o'clock in the morning, Jesus came towards them, walking on the water. Now, their fear was already fairly high because they know they're stuck. They shouldn't still be on this water. They're getting tired. They know if they get too tired, they're going to sink. They won't be able to battle the waves anymore. So they're already starting to panic because they've been there too long. Now, an unknown ghostly figure walks across the water towards them. Does this help their fear or not? I suspect it doesn't. I don't know if you've ever seen the mockumentary. There's a mockumentary called This Is Spinal Tap. It's a classic. It's very funny. It's about a rock band. It's a completely fictitious rock band, and it follows them for a year. It's very funny. And one of the guys on his amplifier, because he wants to be special, he doesn't have 10 on his amplifier. He has 11. So whenever he turns the volume up, it goes to 11. Rather than 10, because that's apparently louder, which obviously isn't, because, yeah. But the point is, their dial has just not gone to 10, it's gone to 11. And these guys are really in trouble. They got the storm, now they got this coming at them. And this is their response. When the disciples saw him walking on the water, they were terrified. That's a strong word. Terrified. Absolutely terrified. In their fear, they cried out, it's a ghost. They live in a culture where demons and superstition and all sorts of things are real life experiences. And they live with this sort of stuff. But Jesus, this is what he does. He spoke to them at once. He said, don't be afraid. Which, you know, quite frankly, if anybody tells you that, it doesn't tend to work, does it? Don't be afraid. try it sometimes for someone who's afraid. It doesn't tend to work. Don't be afraid. He said, take courage. I am here. And then comes this fabulous moment in the story, which you all know, and everybody knows the story, when Peter says, Peter calls to him and said, Lord, if it's really you, so I'm just checking, could you just confirm that this ghostly apparition walking on the water is you before I do anything? If it's you, tell me to come out to you on the water. Peter is responding to Jesus. He is doing what Jesus said, take courage, because I suspect Peter didn't have a lot of it of his own at the time. So he's going to say, if it's you, I'm going to take courage, because you're the guy who's just fed 5,000 people on the lake shore. If it's you, I'm going to trust that you can do this. So he's taking Jesus at his word. He's taking courage. And he's choosing to let the presence of Jesus, if it's you, the presence of Jesus calm his fears, which is probably key to how you cope with fear nowadays. As a Christian, let the presence of Jesus calm your fear. It makes a big difference. And Jesus' response is very simple. In the midst of this, remember there's a storm going on. There's Jesus stood there like some apparition walking on the water. And Jesus just says, yes, come. As if it's, you know, a fancy cup of tea. Yeah, come on, off you go. Here we go. That's really low key, really. And Peter has to confront at that point. I suspect Peter had to confront a decision that you and I mostly make. Every day, every day. Would he allow the fear of stepping out result in missing out? So we're afraid of stepping out, and that ends up in missing out. Would he allow the fear of stepping out to result in missing out? If it's almost as if Peter lets his fear work for him, because I think there are some healthy fears. I think there's a healthy fear, and you can actually let your fear work for you, because Peter was probably more afraid at this point of missing something very special that Jesus had for him than he was of the storm and the wind and the waves and the potential of sinking and all that stuff. He was more afraid of missing God at that moment and that special experience with God than he was of anything else. That's letting your fear work for you. That is a great thing. In fact, the Bible almost encourages that fear. The Bible says the fear of the Lord is what? It's the beginning of wisdom. If you fear God more than you fear anything else, if you fear missing out with Jesus more than you fear anything else happening, wow, you can be a hero very fast. So there is a fear that is good. Our problem is not just fear. It's fearing other things more than we fear God. And by fear, I don't mean terrified and afraid and scared. I think it means fear as in missing all that God has for us and wants for us and wants us to be. I'm going to miss that if I don't act. So I have a choice. Which one I'm going to be more afraid of? And Peter chooses to be more afraid of missing God than of missing out. So Peter lets that fear override all other fears. And verse 29, Peter went over the side of the boat. Can you imagine doing this? The courage it took to do this. Stepped out the side of the boat and walked on the water towards Jesus. And then there's this but, which is a bit of a pain, isn't it? Because if you take courage, sometimes that happens. There's sometimes a but. So you think, okay, God, I'd rather have what you have for me than be afraid of all the other stuff. So I'm going for it. And sometimes there is a but. There is a, it's not always easy. It's not always suddenly calm. The storm still goes on and you find yourself out there. And you start to feel a bit exposed. You start to feel, was this a good idea? And that's where Peter is. But when he saw the strong winds and the waves, he was terrified. He begins to sink. That's why you get the phrase sinking feeling. When your fears overtake you and down you go. He begins to sink and he shouts, save me, Lord. Now, it would be easy to criticize Peter be really easy to say, oh, there's Peter again. Mouth too big, you know, engages mouth before engages brain. Off he goes again, and there's Peter for you. I find it really hard to criticize this guy because I got a nasty feeling. If I was in that boat, one of those 12 disciples, would I have been the Peter? Would I have been the guy who stepped out of the boat in the first place? Remember, there's 11 guys still in the boat. They haven't even gone out of the boat. They are not moving. Peter's the only one who did this. Peter is the only one, and it was his idea. Mind if I come to you, Jesus? You know, I think Peter is an incredibly brave guy. And I love his response. His response tells me that actually, you know, he's got the right idea. He has three options. You have three options if you're stood on a stormy sea, on the water, and you start to sink. What are your three options? Remember, there's Jesus over there, there's a boat there, and there's you here. What are your? You've only got three, I think. What are your three options? Yeah. Option one, hold your breath. That's what. I mean, seriously, if you are self-dependent, you go, here we go, and you're waiting to go under. So option one is hold your breath. Option two, go back to the boat. Leg it back to safety. Throw me a line, boys. That's option two. Now, here's why I can't criticize Peter. What does Peter do? He looks at Jesus and he says, Lord, you save me. I'm not going to save myself. I'm not going to ask them to save me. I'm still looking at you. I'm still looking to you. I think this guy is an amazing guy. Even when he's sinking, he's looking to Jesus. I think that's fantastic. Peter chooses option three, trusts God. The same response that got him out of the boat in the first place, which is interesting, isn't it? First response to get him out of the boat was trust God. Second response, when he's sinking, trust God. He does trust Jesus. And responding to that trust, I love this because there's a word in there that's really important when you're sinking. Jesus immediately, that's a good word. I suspect Peter was relieved about that word. Immediately reaches out and he grabs him. He grabs him. I think Jesus understands your fear. I think he understands Peter's fear. He's thinking, okay, I know what you're thinking now. I've got you. Immediately, he understands what Peter's feeling and he grabs him. And then he says this. You have so little faith. And this is in your pew Bibles, all right? Your chair Bibles, whatever. We haven't got pews. Your chair Bibles. You have so little faith, Jesus said. Why did you doubt me? Now, that's the New Living Translation. I'm not convinced. In fact, I'm pretty sure that is a slight interpretation of, but probably not an accurate depiction of the actual Greek. So here's, or Aramaic, as Matthew would have written it. This is what he says in the NIV. You have little faith, why did you doubt? There's no me on there. That's an interpretation in terms of the NLT. There is no me. Why did you doubt? Because, here's the point, I don't see Peter doubting Jesus at all here. Do you? I mean, he trusts Jesus to get out of the boat in the first place. And then when he's sinking, he trusts Jesus to save him rather than any other option that he's got. I don't see Peter, which I think the NLT is wrong on this, I don't think the word me is right. I don't think Jesus was asking him, why you doubt me? So if Jesus, if Peter trusts Jesus, who does he doubt? Why do you doubt? Who is he doubting? Himself. I think that's the question. And I think that's a question for many Christians when we're afraid. Because I think you do trust God. I think you do believe he can do whatever he wants. I think you do believe he can change circumstances and make them work for your good and turn things around. I think you do believe he is big and powerful and can do miracles. I think you believe that. I think you trust God. You believe God. What you don't believe and what you don't trust is you. You don't trust yourself. Peter doubts himself. Peter loses faith in himself. Peter is afraid that he can't do what Jesus does. And you may be thinking, well, that's a reasonable concern, because I don't think I can do what Jesus does. I have some bad news for you. Do you know what Jesus said about you? Listen to this. He says that you will do even greater things than he has done. Whoever believes in me will do the same works I've done and even greater, because I am going to be with the Father. Over to you. Do you think Jesus believes in you? He believed in Peter. Yeah, come on. Peter didn't believe in himself. Jesus makes that crazy statement. He said he chose Peter because he saw that Peter could do it. Peter could be like him. You know, in Peter's day, a rabbi would choose his disciples, and it was that way around. The disciples didn't choose the rabbi. The rabbi chose the disciples. It's a bit like an interview process. And he would interview them on the basis of one thing. He would say, I believe that you can learn what I know and you can do what I do. Therefore, I'm going to let you into my little group. I'm going to train you. You will be my apprentice. And he would take on a bunch of people on the basis, the pure basis, that they could do what he did. That is what a rabbi would do. That is why he would pick people. And Peter doubts he can. At that moment, that's why he got out of the boat. Because he knows, this is my rabbi. He expects me to do what he is doing. He's training me to do that. So he gets out of the boat. He's just being an apprentice. He's just learning to be like his rabbi. You do it, I'll do it, Jesus. That's how it worked. That's how it worked throughout that time in rabbinical culture. And at that moment, he stops believing he can do it. He stops believing he can be like Jesus. But Jesus believes in us. And you may never have thought that, because you probably don't believe in yourself, but Jesus believes in you. Isn't that wonderful? It's why at the end of his time on earth, Jesus tells them to go to the ends of the earth. Another casual sort of instruction. I want you to go to the ends of the earth, which even now we think, whoa, hang on, and we've got jets and all sorts of stuff. But he says, go to the ends of the earth and make more disciples. And then he leaves. He sends them the Holy Spirit. He gives them the resources they need, but he leaves this fragile new movement in the hands of these people. He leaves the greatest global project on the planet to these 11 guys, and he leaves it in their hands. Why? Because he believes in them. He believes they can do it. He doesn't hang around to check if they're going to screw it up or be back in a week's time just in case you're messing it up. Doesn't do that. God believes people can do incredible things. God believes people can be heroes. You. He believes more in you, I would suggest, than you believe in you. I would strongly think that's true. I haven't met many people who have an overinflated sense of themselves, but when you do, they're really annoying. Often, an overinflated, the sort of arrogant people is a defense. Quite frankly, it's a massive defense because inside they feel really inadequate. So they project this strength and this power and this arrogance that they can do anything and any, and you know, and they do it because they're scared stiff of not being good enough. And the rest of us are just a little bit more honest. Oh, I can't. We're just a little bit more honest about it. God has an incredibly high view of you and of me. God believes people can do incredible things. So what's the problem? The problem isn't your faith in God. I don't think that's the problem. I think the problem is your faith in you. The problem is your trust in yourself. I wonder if this week that can change. If wonder if you, this week you can see yourself as God sees you. Not how you see you, but how God sees you. Not how other people see you, but as God sees you. With incredible potential. That you can be like him. And you can do what he does. We're afraid. And most of our fears are not related to God. Your problem isn't your faith in God. Most of your fears don't relate to God. They relate to you. Of inadequacy, of uncertainty, of failing, of being rejected, of missing out, of change, of losing control or not being in control, of being judged, of getting hurt. Most of my fears are about me. And my lack of faith is not in God. It's often about me. We're afraid we don't have what it takes. But Jesus doesn't have that fear about you. You do. That is your kryptonite. Your lack of understanding of who you can be in God. That is your kryptonite. Your fear of not being able to be like him. That's your kryptonite. You've been told you need to believe in Jesus. You good Christian, good Baptist, you came to faith and you were told believe in Jesus. Well, that's true. But you also need to know this. Jesus believes in you. He believes in you. And that's why he said, you didn't call me. I called you. Because I believe in you. If this story happened today, this would definitely appear on your desktop as clickbait, I think. Something along the lines of man walks on water with ghost, find out more. And then you end up buying a boat, probably. But it would turn up on clickbait and you would click it. I'd click it. If those reporters were to ask Peter why he got out of the boat, I think he'd say, it wasn't because I wasn't afraid. You can't avoid fear. Fear is going to be part of life. Get used to that. We're all afraid. But there's good fear and the bad fear. It was because Jesus said this. It was because Jesus said, take courage. Jesus didn't say, man up. Jesus didn't say any of that. He said, take courage from me. You take courage from me. He also said, I'm here. Take courage. I am here. It is me. The one who stilled the storm. The one who fed 5,000. The one who rose from the dead. I am here. I'm here, the one who believes in you. The one who believes you can be like me. I'm here. If you don't have courage in yourself, says Jesus, you take it from me. But I believe in you, so take some of my belief in you and apply it to yourself. Take it from me. And if you're on the edge of a dream, I don't know, it's a new term, it's a new year. The year starts really in September for so many people. And often it's a moment where we think, okay, this year's going to be different. If you're on the edge of a dream or a decision, if you're on the edge maybe of a phone call, maybe of a conversation, and your kryptonite is kicking in, you don't believe you can do what Jesus does. You don't believe you've got what it takes. You're afraid of that fact. I want you not to let your fear of stepping out lead to missing out. Be afraid, but be afraid of missing out all that God wants you to be and do and become. Be more afraid of that than you are of all the other stuff. Because what's on the other side of that fear could be something wonderful, something extraordinary, something water walking like. It could be. You don't know where it would lead. But if you let that fear get in the way, you'll never know. Here's what you need to take away today. Who you trust is greater than what you fear. Do you trust him? Do you trust him? I'm here, he says. But also, I would add to that, Do you know that he trusts you? That he believes in you? Even when you're afraid that you're not good enough. But he says, I chose you. You're mine. I picked you. I believe you can do heroic things. I believe you can be like me. I hope this week that you are afraid of the right things. That you are afraid of missing out, or more afraid of missing out all that God has for you than you are of stepping out. I hope this week that you trust him, and not only what he can do, but his judgment of you, that he believes in you because he chose you. I've called you by name, you are mine. I have called you. I trust you. I hope as you go out that you will feel what Jesus feels about you, not what you feel about you. And that will override your fear. And that you will step into all the things that God says you can be and do if you trust him and trust in his faith in you. I hope you can do that.